Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Yards on the ground. Jones has 98 of them. Play fake here though. Rodgers going for it all. Looking to break it open. He's got it. Lazard. Gonna go. Touchdown Green Bay. 58 yards to Alan Lazard.
That's how it sounded when the nail went in the coffin at Lambeau over the weekend. Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers advancing to the NFC Championship. Rodgers will play the NFC title in Lambeau for the first time in his illustrious career. It's kind of amazing to say that, but he's been the road QB in the previous instances where he's played for a chance to go to the Super Bowl. Jason Cole covered the National Football League for 30-plus years. He's also a Pro Football Hall of Fame selector, and he's taking the time to join us now on the Bald-Faced Truth. Jason, thank you for taking the time. What a weekend of NFL football, and I want to get into some of your takeaways. How about the NFC Championship matchup, Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers? Was this what you were expecting in terms of this version of Brady with the Buccaneers reaching the NFC title, or is any part of this surprising to you?
No, I'm not surprised with this. I mean, I thought they were going to win yesterday, even though New Orleans had won the first two games of the season. Normally, when a team wins two games, they're going to win the third game because they're just a better team. But there had been a lot of transition. Those two games between New Orleans and Tampa were in, I think it's either the opening week or week two, and then week eight. So those two teams hadn't played for better part of 2 months. What you saw of Brady and the Buccaneers was Brady really getting in sync with his receivers, especially Evans. But, you know, he kind of increased everything with God, increased that familiarity with Godwin. Antonio Brown, even though he wasn't a factor yesterday, Miller, I think he's sort of given up in some ways on throwing the running backs out of the backfield because Fournette just, I mean, it's about once every three times he makes a reasonable body adjustment on a tough throw. And he's not very good at that. Like, they really should have made a trade for James White during the season to get him as a guy on third down. They don't have that guy, and that's kind of hurting them, but they've got enough other weapons to get through it. So I really like Tampa. Green Bay, you know, they are the most consistent team, I would say, in the NFC side. But I do think that it's a matter of degrees in terms of difference between them and Tampa, and more so even New Orleans and some of the other teams. I don't think the gap is that wide on the NFC side.
You mentioned degrees. It's going to be freezing. It's going to be real cold at Lambeau on Sunday. At least that's how the weather projects. And I know Brady's got to be familiar with those types of temperatures, given his long career and all the cold playoff games he played in Foxborough. Do you anticipate any weather being a factor of any kind in terms of giving an advantage one way or the other? Or are these just two quarterbacks, two offenses, and two teams that they're good enough, they're tough-minded enough, where it's really not going to come into play?
Well, I think that there's obviously a lot of players on the Tampa on the Buccaneers who have not played in weather like this, right? You know, not on a regular basis, whereas Packers players get used to it. That said, I do think the personnel on the Buccaneers, especially when you talk about the skill position players, is better, you know, like the wide receivers and tight ends. About outside of the quarterbacks, I think the only guy who you would say is a better, Aaron Jones is probably better than either one of the running backs. That Aaron Jones and their whole depth too, right, is better than the Tampa tandem of Jones and Fournette. So I like that, but you know, the receiving core is definitely leaning towards the Buccaneers' depth and overall talent. Devontae Adams is excellent, but Mike Evans, I think, is every bit as good.
Aaron Rodgers playing at an MVP level. I would be stunned if he wasn't the MVP of the league this year. But what has stood out to you about this year, his second year with Matt LaFleur? Because they go 13-3 both years, but I think any reasonable person can look at both teams and be like, wow, this Green Bay offense in particular is worlds apart better than the 13-3 offense last year. What has stood out to you about Rodgers this season?
I think Rodgers, this is the closest I've seen him playing for an extended period of time at incredible efficiency since the 2010 Super Bowl season. And if you remember that whole Super Bowl run, I mean, he was amazing. I still remember the game at Atlanta that he played where, I mean, he just tore apart the Falcons. It was just, he was brilliant in every way, shape, or form, right? Like, I just looked at, I was watching that game just going, you know, that was amazing. I remember I went to the locker room and I kind of camped out right next to his locker. And I said, you know, he came in and I know him just a little bit. He looked at me and I just looked up and I said, dude, what the, and I won't say the other word, what the heck was that? Right. And he just smiled and he goes, that was fun. He was just on, you know, and then in that Super Bowl against Pittsburgh, like he threw three passes in that game that were just perfect throws. Just, he was amazing in that game. So I remember that stretch, you know, and he's been great for a lot of his career. This is similar in terms of focus and execution. And I think a lot of that's on him because, like, he's the guy who got Mike McCarthy fired. Not that he was wrong. He shouldn't have gotten Mike McCarthy fired after all those years. But he's the one responsible for this. He's the one responsible to make this thing go. And I think he's taken the onus, that burden, upon him and you know, raised the level of the game.
Does the Jordan Love pick factor at all in the motivation for Rodgers in your mind?
Oh, absolutely. It's got to. Do I think that that's the one thing, though, that's overarching for the entire season? No. I think it is a overarching responsibility to the team that you're playing for. Does that make sense? Like, This is, you know, and that you're the one who has created this situation. Again, he's the coach. He's the player who pushed for McCarthy to be gone, right, and wanted a whole new regime. He got what he wanted. It's time to prove that it's going to work. And that's one of the things that I see in Rodgers. And look, his arm talent at his age at 37, it's just an amazing thing to see.
Man, the ball that he hit to Lazard to seal it, we played that cut coming back. But I always marvel at his ability to just kind of sink down and flick it, almost like a three-quarter flick, and it goes 40 yards down the field in stride. It is just beautiful to watch. Mm-hmm. And really, what do you think? I mean, Todd Bowles, the defense coordinator, he loves to blitz with Tampa, and we saw how well they performed with Breeze yesterday. What do you think about the Rodgers against Bowles matchup on Sunday?
I wouldn't want to be blitzing Aaron Rodgers a lot.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a wise thing to do. Like, there are some selected times I would do it. But, boy, it's not a way to make a living. I'd rather play coverage against them. So, you know, we'll see how Bowles does this. You know, maybe work in a couple of blitzes. I will say this. I think you can get to them on an overload blitz. If you overwhelm their offensive line, and that's something that he doesn't see a lot of, but I would throw that out on a very rare occasion. And Bowles is not a guy who uses overload blitzes a lot. You know, that's more of a Rex Ryan, Rex Ryan, Buddy Ryan kind of idea.
Sure. Jason Cole talking NFL with us. We mentioned Todd Bowles. I've seen his name floated for that Philadelphia Eagles job. You know, the Peterson stuff was kind of bizarre, how it all unfolded, and then letting him go after a couple of meetings with Jeffrey Lurie, and how does Howie Roseman play into all this, and a dynamic that us fans out in Oregon kind of saw previously when Chip Kelly had a couple of 10-win seasons and then couldn't really figure it out with Howie and got shown the door. And we know what's happened with Chip since.
But he had the power over Howie. The problem Chip had is he couldn't get along with his own players, and he couldn't get along with people who were in the organization who he didn't hire. Because Chip, that was a personality problem, not a football problem. I just wanted to say that, interject that.
That's accurate, for sure. What do you make of that Eagles opening? Does Bowles kind of fit that, or who do you think would be a best fit for that job?
Bowles is good. Bieniemy obviously has background in Philadelphia as well, and the whole Andy Reid connection. So I'd love to see that as well. The fact that Bieniemy is not getting longer looks for jobs concerns me. It concerns me on two levels. Number one, are they taking him seriously? Number two, is he doing something in his interviews that are holding him up, if that makes sense? Like, everybody talks about he interviews poorly. Well, okay, that can be fixed. You can do a better job. So I'm curious to see how this is going to play out there. But either of the guys that you're talking about or I'm talking about would be really good fits in terms of understanding how the front office works in that team.
Jason Cole joining us. Jason, I'm a Seahawk fan, and we're looking for a new offensive coordinator. Pete calls a lot of the shots here, and there's been some interesting names surfacing for the position that they've talked to. Even as of this afternoon, Adam Gase's name surfaced for the OC role. I'm curious, your experience and your perspective of the league, how do you see the Seattle Seahawks just big picture right now, and who do you think would be a good choice for offensive coordinator given Pete's commitment to the run game and all that good stuff?
Look, I love the weapons they have, and I love Russell Wilson, right? And part of me sits there and says, all right, how about let's just go for it and go get another receiver or two and play three and four wides all game long, right? And run out of that formation by giving your offensive line and your offensive total some better numbers, in terms of the number of big guys out on the field, right? So part of me wants to do that because Russell Wilson is so fabulous to watch throw the ball. But part of me sits there and says, boy, that's way too out there. I would say this. Adam Gase has some movement elements that he's built into his offense in the past, which I think would really help Seattle and really open up the running game a little bit more if they're willing to be a little bit more dedicated to it. But I don't know that he's going to get that chance, that chance to do that.
Yeah, it's a tough spot to be because obviously with a guy as talented as Russell, but there's been moments where, he's gotten a little bit his lack of discipline sometimes shows going too aggressive down the field and throwing some ill-advised interceptions. So, you wonder if a better run game could help Wilson even as a passer, but you don't want it to go too far to where you're inhibiting one of the greatest passers in the game.
Right. Well, I mean, like, he's brilliant. Yes, you want to be able to play a little bit more conventional football, be a little bit less pass happy, be a little bit more classic 50-50, even if it's sort of 53-47 kind of split on your play calls, with the runs. But, that's difficult right now, given the makeup of their team. The talent, Carson's okay as a running back. He's not great. The offensive line is okay, not great. Wilson covers up for a lot of evils on both of those, areas.
Jason Cole joining us for a couple of moments more. What did you make of Brandon Staley's hiring with the L.A. Chargers? Up here in Portland, we've got a keen eye on the Chargers because of Justin Herbert and his such an impressive rookie season. I know Pep Hamilton, you know, had a good relationship with Herbert. Shane Steichen calling some plays as well was big for the Chargers and Herbie's success. And now they go with a defensive-minded guy, a young guy, you know, that's been a defensive coordinator for just one season. What did you make of that decision?
I really like Staley as a coordinator. He did a lot of really terrific things this year with the Rams. You know, made that team better fast. You know, but he just hasn't been a coordinator that long, right? And you'd just like to see a little bit more presence, a little bit more, you know, work at it before he gets that. Before he gets that catapulted into that position. But, you know, they got great weapons on offense. You know, Herbert, you talked about a lot. I just, there are a lot of things about the Chargers I really, really like. And I think that they have a chance to, you know, to put themselves in a position for a wild card. They're a little bit too far behind the Chiefs to make up that gap, but it was a pretty strong team.
Absolutely. And the AFC side, Mahomes goes out. He gets the diagnosis of a concussion. He does not return. Yeah, it's a good thing. But, Jason, I think there was probably a time, maybe not so far long ago, pre-concussion protocol, that he may have come back into this game, into a playoff game, because so much is on the line.
Absolutely.
Yeah, what'd you make of that entire sequence?
They followed the rules. There's a story out now that it might have been a pinched nerve, which is an odd way. I've never seen a guy react quite that way to a pinched nerve. So I'm a little bit skeptical of that, but I'm interested to see if that's the case. You know, I mean, because there wasn't a helmet-to-helmet hit. It didn't feel like a violent hit to the head yesterday. But there was definitely a pull to the neck, so I can see where it might be some nerve damage in this one. All of that said, the fact that he didn't come back yesterday after that, you know, makes you question this a lot. And obviously, whoever that independent neurologist is who's in charge of, you know, signing off on whether he can come back to play, that guy's under a lot of pressure this week.
Yeah.
This is, you know, like, this is playing for the right to go to the Super Bowl. This is not missing week 12. You know, this is, I expect that Mahomes is going to play, especially if that independent neurologist happens to live in Kansas City.
You're right. Yeah. We're all human, right? At the end of the day.
Exactly.
We're all human.
Exactly.
Hey, given a healthy Mahomes or Mahomes that's playing, you know, and it's the Patrick Mahomes that we know, Josh Allen rides the Bills into Kansas City. I could definitely talk myself into Josh Allen, the Bills getting this win and getting to the Super Bowl. What do you make of that matchup?
Oh, I mean, there's a pathway for them. It's not. I don't see it as a very likely one if Mahomes is playing. I think that Kansas City will be pretty revved up for this game, especially with people talking about how Josh Allen's the MVP over Mahomes. I think Kansas City is by far the best team left in the playoffs. It's not even close. They have the best quarterback. They have best wide receiver, they have the best tight end, they have the best strategic coach of anybody who's left in this whole thing. So to me, this is Kansas City's game to win and perhaps blow out Buffalo. But there's also the Kansas City that plays bored a lot of the time, the one where, oh, well, we fell behind 10-0 or we fell behind 20-10 or whatever these big deficits that were consistently throughout the playoffs a year ago. You know, they were behind by double digits in every game, right? They won all three of those games. I think I would worry if they got caught, you know, like not prepared and stale for this game. That's the one way that the Chiefs can lose this game, because the Bills do have enough firepower to take advantage of that.
And as we let you go, Jason, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about Drew Brees. Likely his final game played yesterday, although he himself has yet to make it official. I'd be shocked if he did come back. How do we summarize this guy's career, who was just so spectacular for so long in the regular season, but it does feel like there was some playoff success kind of left on the table for him and Sean Payton?
Yeah, like, could you say that they're sort of like the Atlanta Braves? Mm. You know, where you think there should have been at least a second title somewhere in there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't get it done. There were three kind of wasted years in the middle of that where they went 7-9 3 years in a row, where I think Peyton realized he had sort of, you know, lost his edge a little bit. You know, they also got jobbed in that game against the Rams. You know, you can go through a lot of different circumstances, but that's a great combination, historic combination of coach and quarterback, a phenomenal run. But I just kind of look at it and say, yeah, that wasn't quite enough. I mean, they're still Hall of Famers. I mean, I'm not sure if Peyton's a Hall of Fame coach, but Brees is certainly a Hall of Fame player. He's just going to walk in. But, yeah, you felt like something was left on the table with him.
He's covered the NFL for over three decades, a selector for the Pro Football Hall of Fame on Twitter at JasonCole62. Jason, thanks for taking the time. It was a lot of fun going around the league with you, and we'll look forward to talking with you again soon.
Absolutely. Take care. Thank you.
There he is, Jason Cole. When we come back, Culligan Water Cooler Report. I wanted to react to a couple of things that Jason mentioned there as well, and a whole lot more on what's the Super Bowl matchup you want to see. 503-417-7575. Nubian for Cazzano on a holiday Monday. This is the BFT. It's been a good show. Welcome back to the folks down in Eugene joining the program, BFT Radio Network. Nubian for Canzano on this MLK Junior Day holiday. Hope everyone's doing well out there. 503-417-7575, the phone number. Peter Sampson. Blazers go down to the Spurs today. And what were some of your major takeaways? I know, obviously, Lillard had some decent day in the box score, but no CJ seems to really have affected this team today.
Yeah, I mean, CJ's finally been playing at an all-star level with Harden out of the conference. It looks like his chance to maybe squeak into that game. No CJ really hurts him. A couple takeaways. Rodney Hood finally looked like Rodney Hood. It's been slow recovery from that Achilles injury. He had 21 points. And also, interestingly enough, Nas Little got in before Gary Trent Jr. played a little bit of a shooting guard for just a minute or two there. That is wild. That speaks to how decimated the Blazers are, because you got to understand, they don't carry a full 15 guys already. One of those guys that they do carry is Keljan Blevins, who's barely an NBA player. Then you have CJ Ellaby hurt, CJ McCollum hurt, Zach Collins hurt, Yusuf Nurkic hurt. They got to add a guy to this roster.
Oh, boy. One of those years again. You probably touched on it a little bit with Canzano last week. Injuries again, man. It's a primary theme of the season. Can we never get away from it? If it's not one thing, it's another.
You know, it's just like Dame said, man, every year it's always something. Every year. He's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Looking at these standings, the Lakers show 11-3, the Clippers 10-4. Utah off to a 9-4 start. Phoenix off to a 7-4 start. And now you've got Spurs, Blazers, Mavs. In that bucket, Blazers right now at 8-6. Spurs now 8-6 as well after their win today. They would be tied for quote unquote fifth, as it were. And then is the deadline coming around the corner? When is that trade deadline? You mentioned this before. It's still March, right?
Yeah, the trade deadline, I believe, is March 25th. It's okay. Definitely in March. So there's plenty of time to make a move. It just remains to be seen what it's going to be. I expect them to grab some sort of big man off of the free agent pool there and sign him to a vet minimum contract. But, I mean, that's something that they're evaluating right now.
Meanwhile, CJ McCollum's sprained left foot will be reevaluated in a week, Terry Stott said today. He left at halftime of the 112-106 win over the Atlanta Hawks on Saturday. hope that's good news in a week from now, because it'd be nice to have that guy back.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, it wasn't one of those totally gruesome injuries that you see sometimes, but you saw it. And man, his foot definitely bent in a way it wasn't supposed to when it got stepped on. I don't recall who stepped on.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald
Face. Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.